center, I really don't see a problem doing that. It's not easy, but it's doable. I don't know how productive it would be, but it's certainly doable. The Flex 1500, by the way, puts out 5 watts through 6 meters, and you can get it to unlock to transmit everywhere if you really need to, but they seem to be rather picky about that. The Flex 5000 is a dual receiver. Each one of these receivers, the 1500, the 3000, and the 5000, are 10 dB better in various levels of performance, mostly IMD handling and sensitivity. So, you know, that's what you're paying for. But you also get some increased flexibility. What's nice about the 1500 is, that you don't need a sound card for it. There's no INQ inputs, if you will. It runs on a USB 2 interface, and it's got its own built-in sound system, if you will. It will only sweep 48 kilohertz. It won't do 128 or 192 like the 5000 will. But, you know, I think that's a reasonable compromise. And shucks, guys, it's less than $700. Take it home, plug it in, good to go. You could probably run it on your average dual core laptop with no trouble whatsoever. I don't know if there's quite enough gumption on a netbook, but certainly on a 1.6 gig dual core laptop, that's more than enough to knock yourself out. I have access to one. I'm debating as to whether I'm going to ask to use it next weekend, but it certainly got my attention. So, anybody else?
W2JEK. Yeah, one thing about the Flex Radio, I just got the QRP quarterly here. They have a 3-page review on it, and they're talking about the 5 watts. The guy that wrote the article, W2V, mentions that he, for his sideband and CW and for slow scan TV, he uses a 25-watt amplifier for those 3 modes. He says the 5 watts is plenty for the PSK31. But, got a good 3-page article in here on it. Back to that, W2JK.
Well, I quietly sold my 703 Plus a couple of weeks back. And the thought is that when the time comes, I will buy a 1500. Flex 1500 to replace it. Not quite as good on batteries, but it's just got the cool factor to death. I mean, it really does. It really, really does. And I think I'm going to use it first as a QRP rig, and second I'll use it with my transverters, and we'll go from there. And by the way, it's got transverter ports. It's even got a 1 milliwatt output. Isn't that cool? All right, I baited him enough. K2RIW, your thoughts on that?
K2RIW here. What I'm thinking about now is the future capability of software-defined radios combined with a Sirius VHF operator. And what I'm about to ask falls into the gray zone of, would you, as a single operator with a lot of computer horsepower, be considered a single operator or a multi-operator? That's a minor detail. But picture this. Assume now I've got a 6-meter transverter, a 2-meter transverter, a 220 transverter, and a 432 transverter. 4 transverters in this particular example. Assume they all come out at 28 to 30 megacycles as an IF output. And I've either got a 1 or a 2-channel SDR radio listening to those outputs. The 4 transverters go into or a box. I could call it a switch matrix, I could call it a server, I could call it a router. But by way of the dual freak radio, and by hopping into which one of the converters it's looking at, transverters, I could have on the screen 4 simultaneous pan adapter displays. program, displaying the four bands and showing all activity across, let me pick a number, one megacycle or so of each one of those bands. And therefore, I'm seeing what activity exists. And so I'm looking at all four bands at once, and if any activity comes along, in theory, I don't miss it, depending on whether or not my, let me drop, whether or not my system hops to each one of those bands for X number of seconds or does it more rapidly. There's various ways I could set it up so that it has extremely high probability of intercept. In other words, any signal coming on for more than a couple of seconds will be detected by that system. The next level above that would be skimming function on each of the four bands, where it wouldn't be too difficult for it to demodulate Morse code signals. I'm just thinking non-digital at first. Demodulate Morse code signals and tell me that, yes, I've worked K2ZO on 6 meters, but I haven't worked them on 220. So it flashes the 220 signal on that particular portion of the pan adapter, and all I have to do is hit my pointer on that particular one, and I start transmitting on top of Jim's frequency as soon as he stops transmitting, and I get him immediately. Yes, it does sound like a multi-op operation. It does sound like kind of an octopus, and so the legality of it, whether or not you consider it multi-op, is something to be considered. But has something like this already been proposed and already been done, Gordon? W2TTT in the group, K2RIW.
Okay, I think you need to break the question down, or the, should we say the scenario down to its constituent pieces, and analyze how they're handled today. So, if there's a pan adapter display that has multiple signals on it, oh, I mean like my Pro 2 or my Pro 3, or even, heaven forbid, the 746 Pro or the 7000, yeah. I mean, I have a sweeping function. I identify signals with my eyeballs, or my ears, as the case may be, and I then go leap on the frequency where I think the activity is, and I go after it. Some people think that's cheating, so, but it's not. It's not considered cheating. It's called like having a pan adapter on your receiver and using it. Okay, let's take that one step further. So I am sitting there and I'm operating, let's say, a digital mode. Let's say that digital mode is, let's say it's DigiPan. The DigiPan allows you to simultaneously receive several signals and decode them simultaneously. You can pick off which ones you've worked and which ones you haven't. Each line in the waterfall display that you've selected equates to a horizontal channel of text on a line that is on the window above. And as you work each one, you can, add them to the built-in log. That's not considered cheating. That's considered single operator. We haven't really seen situations where stations automatically reply in contest mode, although I'm thinking maybe there's some digital modes where that may not be the case anymore. But, ARQ type stuff. But having said that, I think that The presentation and awareness of an opportunity, however technically elaborate and sophisticated it may be, is within the realm of the rules for a single op, as long as it's contained within the station's confines. It's not, using a DX cluster, which is considered assisted operation even for a single op. So that kind of separates that line of thinking that, external input outside the bounds of the station is considered an assist. Inside the station, it's considered not, as long as it's one human being. And I think the other piece of it is the decision to transmit. That's where I was going with the ARQ thing. The decision to transmit has to be human. And in that case, then it remains a single operator decision. And finally, if you want to constrain it to only one transmitting signal per station, in a single operator mode,
phone.
That's fine. They didn't used to do that, but then with automation, voice gears and CW gears and other digital add-ons, they had to add that in order to constrain it. But that's pretty much how I see it. Interestingly enough, I'm going to give everybody a book reference that you might think about when you think of automation. T.W. Singer, Papa Whiskey, initials T.W., Singer, like the sewing machine. The book is called Wired for War. Wired for War. And a lot of what I'll call the ethical decisions that we're asking as to whether it's a single operator, is it a multi, if you have a SIS, where does the human being enter into it, and when does not, is something that enters the ethics of war. You know, because now if I have an autonomous vehicle that can identify targets and has the ability to shoot them, and it would be considered wasteful and inopportune to not include a human in the loop, then go ahead and let the machine fire on its own authority based on the information you've given it in order to identify targets. That's just like transmitting in so many words. So, you know, what's the ethical judgment there? And oh, by the way, who gets tried for war crimes? But then the other equation is, even if you leave the human in the loop, target identification, if the automation says, this is your target, or this is your station, this is your opportunity, how do you really know that it is? I mean, we don't have a contest where you're penalized for a dupe. Maybe we should think about that. I mean, a penalized for even attempting a dupe. If you're called for a dupe, it means you screwed up, you take away points. Think about that. Anyway, K2BAR. Dick, does that answer your question?
Yeah, yes, Gordon, it answers almost all of my questions. So as long as you keep it within the shack, as long as I'm not using hardware, people, clusters, DX clusters or whatever, outside of the shack, it appears that I can create it one single operator. So now if I'm really wired for war, I'm scanning four bands simultaneously with four PAN adapters just for my visualization of what's going on. I've got the equivalent of four skimmers working, telling me which of the signals on each of those four bands I have or have not worked, and it's setting a priority list for me. In other words, in the case of, say, for instance, a 10-gig contest where you get points for mileage as well as working new stations. So a new station with greater mileage goes to the top of the priority list. The skimmer finds that, tells me is on that portion of the band. The VFO has already been positioned to that portion of the band. I just press go. I'm the human operator. I select to transmit on that particular frequency at this time to catch that guy that my skimmer told me I haven't yet gotten on that band, that portion of the band. And then I go to the next one and so on. So with all of this computer-aided assist, I can now work a much greater number of stations, in theory at a greater number of miles, rack up a much higher score. I've done it with hardware that I assembled, and therefore maybe I can call this single operator, and maybe I can not feel too guilty when I get that award. What do you think, Gordon? KQLIW.
I think you're on solid ground. The decision to transmit still remains human. And I fail to understand the difference between having software scan a passband for me and looking at the results for, shall we say, viable targets, if you will, and a simple, you know, repetitive scan, automated tuning that happens, you know, in radios for the last three or four decades now. So if I can scan between 50.1 or 50.090 and 50.150 in the wee hours of the night, and just sweep through it, and if I hear a blip, a burp, or a chirp, then I'm going to, you know, stop that scan if it's not something I recognize, or if it is something I recognize, I'm just going to let it roll right over it. There's no difference between that and what we're doing now, except for the fact that we have better software as opposed to earwear. The old software was a tuning mechanism. It just drove the tuning. The new software decodes the signals and tells us who it is or what it is. Isn't that interesting? So we've just gotten better at it. Is that different than using a coherent detector versus a BFO versus a really neat DSP receiver? All the same to me, it's just a matter of sophistication.
W2JEK. Yeah, one thing is all this is done by your computer. Are you going to get any satisfaction out of what you've done outside of the fact that you've assembled this computer? I mean, it's like what a guy with my little QRP rig, I get some satisfaction because I worked a guy that a bunch of kilowatts have been struggling for some time, but they'll still be struggling because they don't zero beat like I do, and maybe beat out a kilowatt or 100 watt station. The satisfaction of what you get out of it, is that going to be the same?
You know, Don, satisfaction takes many forms, and oh man, I'm going to get in trouble with this one. I'm not a blonde guy. You guys know Nancy. I definitely like, auburn-haired, brunettes. I'm very good with that. There are other aspects I like too, which we will not go into. But, boom type comes rolling in the room. It's going to catch my eye. May not catch my interest, but it'll catch my eye. I'm not dead. So, the question is, which is more satisfying? Depends on what you're looking for. It's all different. When I was 18, I might have been thought differently. But, I'm going to be 53 next month, so I have a different view of the world. And one I would dare say is more mature. So, I'm not going to argue whether or not the satisfaction of zero beating using a QRP radio that you built yourself and with 5 watts you got to contact is more or less than that of a person who assembles a very complex station with all sorts of intricate goodies and sets all sorts of odd parameters that are just different. I think it's just a different kind of satisfaction. So, I'll just leave it there.
There's something going on here, and that is, when it comes to moonbounds, classically moonbounds on a so-called valid QSO consisted of a human being at one single sitting before the rig, wearing, let's say, a set of earphones, listening to a very weak CW signal in the noise. He must recognize a full set of call letters, at least one piece of unknown information like signal strength. TMO is what's used for the moonbounce people. And then the equivalent of Rogers, in other words, confirmation that the proper amount of information, full set of call letters, and the unknown piece of information did pass in both directions. That was valid moonbounce. And so the guys who wanted to rack up a whole lot of countries and a whole lot of states on moonbounce and get on the list and near the top of the list had to devote a lot of hardware, 400 square feet of antenna, 1,500 watts of antenna, a fraction of a decibel of noise figure, and a couple of years of their life in order to get on to near the top of the list. On the job.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
As Dix points this out, I want to point out Dix, one of those guys, and he was my idol, one of my idols. along with guys like Wayne Green, by the way, so you're in rather sordid company, be aware. He's one of those guys I saw on the cover of magazine. I went, ooh, ooh, ooh. I think it was CQ magazine, actually. CQ? I think it was CQ. Anyway, but we have a lot of guys who have newly licensed, too, who don't know that history, so I'm just going to fill that in. Go ahead, Dick. Continue with your question.
Yeah, my first article was 1970 Ham Radio Magazine, the Amplifier Tripler Strip Line Rig. But it wasn't until 1972, August issue, that I appeared on the front cover, holding onto that 12-foot dish, standing on a picnic table, in front of Dr. Dick Turin, W2IMU of Bell Labs. So that was the first time that I appeared. I think you said you got really serious in 76, so you were looking at a four-year-old issue. All right. So in order to get high on the list with EME, you got to devote to, well, let me pick a number, 5 years of your life. Along comes Joe Taylor's WSJT protocol and modes and demodulation. You're transmitting these tones, and a computer program is listening for the tones. And instead of a human set of ears listening to a tone and the noise, which all the tone can be a few dB below the noise, and the 50 hertz of resolution bandwidth of human hearing system can pick out that tone. But now with WSJT, the signal can be 28 decibels below the noise power coming out of the IF strip of that receiver, and WSJT will give you, let me pick a number, 95% probability of decoding all of that information, displaying it across the screen. Let me drop. So now a guy, instead of using 400 square feet of antenna, 16 Yagis and 432, all of them 22 elements long, it's almost 5,000 cubic feet of antenna. It's a volumetric array being steered at azimuth and elevation, 1,500 watts into the antenna, and a fraction of a dB noise figure preamplifier at the antenna, and all of that properly sequenced and good stability and whatever. Along comes this WSJT mode where a guy on 2 meters with one single Yagi on the chimney of the house and 150 watts of power can work almost the same number of countries and the same number of states on 2 meter moon bounce, for instance, and he can do it in 3 months. And so the guys who have spent 4 or 5 years saying, hey, this is unfair. It isn't being done with a set of earphones. It's being done by a computer program listening to a weak signal and a noise and demodulating it. And I'm not sure that that one has really been settled, but from my point of view, the easy way to settle it is to make two lists. One list by things like the WSJT mode and one list by the human hearing mode. Let's chew on this for a second because I'm about to add to it. Over to you, Gordon, K2RIW.
All right. First reaction is I also remember the guys in that same time frame running chart recorders, and boy, you had to you had to send CW very, very slowly to make that chart recorder happy, and it would actually give you a general trend line of when the dots and dashes were, and you could see it graphically as well. Even if your hearing wasn't good enough, even back then, people would add chart recorders to, and you know, these amazing Darlington amplifiers that would somehow drive the needle of the chart recorder and not jump off the, you know, off the end of the peg, you know, when transmitting locally. You know, they wouldn't be that, they'd be, you know, shielded well enough for, against the local RFI or RFs, from the local transmitter, which was usually the legal limit or thereabouts. I think the same argument could be made about people who complain that coherers were the right way to go, and later on, you know, regenerative receivers started showing up, and direct conversion receivers started showing up, and super heterodyne receivers started showing up, and then, you know, it was easy with AM, and someone threw a whole lot of money and time and effort and created that garbage called single sideband. And, you know, I don't need as much power now. I don't need this massive power supply for my audio amplifier, let alone for my RF deck, the way I used to. So, is that evolution any different? Anybody else? Dick, I'll throw it back to you.
No, it's a rather similar set of evolutions, whether you're talking about Spock going to crystal-controlled rigs and narrowband superheterodyne receivers and WSJT mode, as I see it, with proper introduction, with proper settling of the smoke, so to speak, this is the method of progress. It is more modern hardware applied to a particular technical problem, and when properly done, you get better results. Less time, more performance, less watts required, and so on. The next step beyond this, once you've got digital signal processing, similar to what's inside of a Hewlett-Packard 3561A dynamic signal analyzer. This is a DSP-like piece of hardware. It only scans 0 to 100 kilohertz, but in that 0 to 100 kilohertz, it is a ubiquitous spectrum analyzer. You could, if you want to, set the controls on the front panel such that it is emulating 1 million or so filters. Each one of them is a millihertz wide, and they're all contiguous with each other. There's the ID. So they're all contiguous with each other, and to really build those filters would fill up a couple of rooms. But the DSP is a box about the size of a DX100, if you know what that means. And it does all that. It's got a fantastic, probably 24-bit analog to digital converter in the front end, lots of computing horsepower. It's a 20-year-old piece of equipment, by the way. And so it'll give you a waterfall display and every one of those millihertz filters, how much energy has accumulated in them will be displayed on that screen. So now you can find signals that are what you used to think was 40 decibels below the noise, 30 decibels at least, and very, very weak signals, even if they're drifting, will be displayed on that screen. And you could, in theory, either by computer control or with your eye, read that waterfall display, read that very weak signal, and now do moon bounds with a watt. In theory, that's doable. That's the progress. Yes, the old-timers will complain that you're using unfair instrumentation. It's not really a human being with a set of earphones doing it. But there's still a human operator involved. It's all taking place in one shack. And I think you're going to say, Gordon, that's progress, and you're in favor. W2TTT and the group, K2LIW.
Yeah, but, you know, I want to resonate a little bit of some of the signal that we got from Mr. Don before. There are different forms of satisfaction, and I would argue that you know, operating radio with a straight key, a pad and pencil. My friend N2AYJ, Stan Alakwitz, loves straight key night, and he loves contests where the automation is absolutely at its barest bones. It's a receiver, your ears, and you're either straight key or your microphone. That's it. No keyers, no pen adapters, no DX clusters. Just, if you tune to it and you can filter it out, you can use it. But you got to hear it with your ears, and you got to write it down with your hands, and you got to speak with it with your mouth and push the talk or hit the key with your hand or foot. Those are the requirements. And I think there's satisfaction to that, too. I mean, you know, I used to take my 703 Plus into the boonies and throw up a 40-meter dipole 4 feet in the air and work somebody, you know, 1,500 miles away at 40 meters. That was neat. I mean, I would lay that 40-meter dipole around over a bunch of shrubs, and it would literally be 3 or 4 feet off the ground. And there's a satisfaction to that. I didn't do that just when I was a kid. I did that last summer. some before and other times in between. So, but yeah, I think it's time for a different challenge. And, you know, like anything else, you try different challenges throughout your life. And sometimes you go back to old challenges. For me, operating CW is a constant resurgent challenge because I've just never been good at it. And I don't like to listen to spelling of words. It drives me crazy. I want to talk in sentences. I read phrases or sentences. I don't read words. So spelling out words is just plain torture. It's not because I'm not a good speller. It's because it's just like watching water drip. You know, it's just painful. So, and I don't have the dexterity to get up to the higher speeds, which I did. And all the discipline or the time, or both, to do that. But anyway, neither here nor there. Because there's that gap in my time and performance, there's always that challenge to do better when I devote time to do that. And so there's that satisfaction. I could sit there and crank up a program that decodes CW. And sometimes I'll do that. But I'm more likely to just try to head copy it myself, as others are too. I might detect a signal using some automation, but once I find it, I'm going to, you know, decode it. Detect and decoding are two different things. One is presence, one is meaning. And, you know, if I decode it, then I'll do it that way. NS2K, you've been quiet. K2BAR.
Anyway, very... I love it. Anyway, this is excellent, just a wonderful conversation here this evening. But, it seems to have confirmed my theory here. Now, I'm sure there'll be a certain kickback. Oh, I don't know how to, especially on a club type event like VHF contest or field day. But I think it'd be a wonderful opportunity for people to discover the new technology and take advantage of it all at the same time. Anyway, let me give it back to the net. NS2K.
Yeah, I think that was the nub of your question was not the moral, ethical, or technical problems, but the opportunity to how to introduce it and is it appropriate to introduce it at a VHF contest station, at a field day site. And the answer is absolutely. I think, I would like to take some time to put a DST rig side by side with a more traditional radio, and probably the bands where I could make the most use out of it would be 432, oddly enough for me, because I have a transverter that's roughly the same power level as I have available on my IT7000. The IT7000 is a state-of-the-art radio. It's not a bad receiver at 432. It's not the greatest in the world, but it's a pretty, you know, compared to what I started with years ago, it's pretty high performing. And, you know, if I take my Down East microwave transverter, which has as good a front end, if not better, I would say probably better on 432 than the 7000 does, and I compare, a 7000 DST, you know, with that of a flex radio IF with a Down East microwave front end, i.e. the transverter, I think that would be a fair fight to compare. That might be interesting. And doing ABs on that might be a whole lot of fun. And even if I can't transmit on the flex, that may be what I do, but it does mean I have to get a 432 antenna moving up on my end, on my mast, on my tower, before next week, which is a possibility. It's still possible. So, anybody else?
Jake.
Don.
thing that we have in our new technology is a thing called QRSS, with a dot 30 seconds or 60 seconds or some length like that. Needless to say, a dot is a third of a dash, so that's you're talking a minute and a half to, on a 30 second for a dash compared to a 30 second dot. Needless to say, you have to have the proper spacing and everything else, and eventually you can send a message that way. And people are doing this, especially down in the low frequencies, in the 500 kilohertz range. My friend John K. and 1H is doing this. Also, the that 136 kilohertz band, which we don't have yet, and also in the 160 to 190 Mark 15 band. I think some of the operators are using that mode. The thing that gets me is, yeah, you're sending this message. It takes a couple of minutes to get a message. You get a couple words out, and then by that time, it's old news. You know, I guess under some extreme conditions, it would be worthwhile to use such a mode, but there are times, too, when you want to get an answer to somebody right away, sort of kind of a thing. You send something to somebody, and hopefully they answer you right away. It doesn't take an hour to send out a message, if you know what I mean. I remember having a guy come into a code test one time. We dropped it. And it took the 5 words a minute, and he wrote everything down in dots and dashes. And he figured out what the dots and dashes meant. About a half hour later, he finally had the paper filled out. And I think we this is the first time they had encountered that. And I guess he passed the code test, but next time somebody came along, the word was out, you will be copying dots and dashes, and it's taken an hour to figure it out. So I guess it all depends on what your parameters are and how you want to look at these things. There, like I say, with this QRSS, there's some form of getting through, again, something like WSJT, getting through a means of getting through through the noise, but better than what you would normally have on a regular radio. Then the other side of the like a double-edged sword. Now it takes forever to get the message across. Anyway, back to that, W2JK.
So just to be quick about this, they ban dot dash copying on subsequent test sessions?
I think that was put out by the AORL, copying dots and dashes was not acceptable. I mean, the first time this happened, this guy copied the whole thing, all 5 minutes of it, all dots and dashes, and it took about a half hour to figure out, this was dot all by itself, that's an E, and he found all the E's, and then he found all the I's, and so on, you know. I mean, if you're making a contact with somebody, and he sends you something, you should be copying it down in letters, not dots and dashes, and take him a half hour to figure it out, because that guy's going to wait for you to reply to what he sent to you.
He can send a lot of AS's until he's, until you have it figured out. Grin, grin. Alrighty. Fair enough. Alright. Anybody else with comments? Dick, your comments.
All of these things that are a little bit controversial at first, eventually when the smoke settles, progress does get made. When you get a chance, I've got a question for Jim, K2ZO, K2RIW. Over to you, Gordon.
Alrighty. And no one else does any more on this. I'm going to throw it back to NS2K real quick for his comments on this subject before we close this topic up. We'll go to the next one. NS2K, K2BAR.
Oh, sorry. Not a whole lot more to add here. I think we've beat this pretty good, rather well. And I certainly got my question answered. In spades, and a whole number of other other thoughts about various aspects of anyway. Very, very good net tonight, albeit a bit long, but I suppose that's what happens under the circumstances. In any case, have a good evening, Anis 2K.
Hey, Jim, if you mind, it's your fault. Alrighty. Thank you for posing the question. You'll probably get a phone call after the net, by the way, from this station. In case you're wondering, so duck and roll. And it won't be involving, don't ever do that again. That won't be part of the conversation, but you'll probably get a phone call. All right, K2RAW, K2BAR, your question, Dick.
Let me make sure that Jim is still with us. I haven't put him to sleep. K2ZO, you still there, Jim?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let me warn you, what you're about to hear is a joke. I came close to saying this joke last Sunday, and probably good that I didn't. Back in November 14th, the East Coast DX Association at Diageo's hosted the Hudson Division Awards Conference, and so quite a number of Hudson Division Awards were handed out, including the Technical Service Award. So Jim was the host along with, I guess, Joyce, KA2ANF, host and master of ceremonies. When Kay Craigie presented to me that very nice award, I said to Frank Fallon, N2FS, the division director, gee, that's really pretty. Can you get me another one of those? He says, no problem. I said, can you get Kay Craigie to present it to me again? He says, yeah, no problem. So that guy, Frank, he's something else. He pulled that off. What do you think, Jim? We got to make sure he's elected again.
Well, he had told me, because I was looking at both of them there. At the time, there were both two plaques there. He said, no, this is one, this is going later. So I did know about that. Yeah, he did okay. We'll elect him again.
Yeah, the joke was that I'd be saying that, hey, I liked that award so well. I've got one more spot on the living room wall where I can put another award. Hey, can you get me another one? In reality, Frank was concerned that the award maybe was ordered too late. He wasn't sure it would arrive on time for the awards conference in November 14th. So he ordered a second one from a faster vendor, and they both arrived. And so what are you going to do with the second one? And so I got two presentations. Can't complain. I'd like you, Gordon, K2RAW.
Ah, dear me. Frank is a character. I will keep my... As a life member of the league, and a big believer in the league, and one who's doing some work, industry work, in correlation with... or cooperation might be with the league right now. I'm a very big proponent there. No, I don't get paid to do that work, in case you're wondering, the labor of love, but I only get paid by my employer to do what I'm doing. But the bottom line is that I'll stay out of league politics. Thank you very much. I've kind of had my fill of that. Anyway. I strongly advise people to join the league. I will say that without a bit of hesitation. In fact, it just confounds me why hens are not league members. I just don't understand. I just don't understand that. Anyway, having said all that, that was a funny line, Mr. Dick. And especially, even, you know, sometimes you have to explain the joke and it becomes unfunny. It became funnier for those of us who weren't there. I was on a Boy Scout outing that weekend, so as I almost always am on that weekend, so it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. All right. Anybody else with comments or questions as we roll toward 11 o'clock? Alrighty. Well, we've had such a great time tonight. I want to thank everybody for checking in. It's a very lively group. Provocative questions, pedestrian questions, all good. Last week's question, or the week before's question, was about, that was kind of amusing, that stuck out in my head, was the one about this UHF TV, an FM TV antenna with the built-in rotator for $30 that Noel spotted. What a marvelous toy that is. I have one here. It is great. I just can't wait to get it in nicer weather up on my van or up... if it works well on my van, or here in the house, I'll get one for the other. It's just a marvelous way to do over-the-air TV, but more importantly, the built-in rotator and the way it's assembled allows you to think about putting either long-distance Wi-Fi or a small, let's say, 3-element 2-meter beam if you make it really lightweight, or a 440 beam or a 220 beam on top of it, and no problem feeding it or turning it. It's got enough oomph to handle probably a 3-element 2-meter beam without any troubles at all. You just gotta love stuff like this. Anyway, from the great-great-grandchildren of Sun Yat-sen, we have some interesting consumer products here in the United States and around the world. On that point, I'm going to thank everybody again. I'll thank also the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. By the way, their dinner is coming up, so if anyone's interested in spending time on a Sunday evening in February, we have a really nice buffet dinner soon. It's only $29, I think, a dinner, which is sweet. And there'll be some other things as well. We have the upcoming Barra, drop it, the upcoming Barra meeting on the first Sunday in February. A week from Friday, tomorrow we have the test session for Barra at Westwood High School. And we also have in March, the first Sunday in March, around noontime, we have the Barra auction, which will replace our March meeting. So all is wonderful, and that will also be at Westwood High School in Washington Township. So a lot of good things happening. We have, of course, Kit Night on Tuesday nights at Westwood High School as well. Coffee on Tuesdays and Fridays up near the McDonald's in the food court at Paramus Park, starting about 8 or 8:30. So all these fun things, as well as the other nets of the week. Take care all and have a great night. This is K2BIR W2TTT, signing clear, 73.